All right, Hawks fans and HoopBall fans, we have a special HoopBall promo. This is big, real big, like Manny Fresh, house real big, car real big, daddy. Anyway, before I start singing and dancing in the booth to a New Orleans classic, this is a huge week for everyone at HoopBall because all of our 2020-2021 NBA season products are finally for sale. These HoopBall products are the best in the business, so listen up. Here's what's out. The Draft Guide. This is our flagship, our shining beacon like Superman. The most comprehensive draft guide in fantasy sports. Our guys went 400 players deep again this year. A future access pass to the Brewski 150 is also out. If you don't know what the Brewski 150 is, you need to know now. It's the fantasy draft list that has beaten every other list for the last decade. Decade. And new for this year, HoopBall is unveiling our new monthly membership plans. I'll try to keep this part short as much as I can. We have the Fantasy Pass, which includes the Draft Guide, the Brewski 150, and also the new DFS Pass. And all of our in-season premium tools. The DFS Pass is also available on its own, if that's your thing. We have the new Wager Pass for our sports bettors out there who want picks and analysis. And we have the HoopBall 360. The sucker has all of the stuff above, plus even earlier access to the Brewski 150. So head to hoop-ball.com or follow at HoopBall Fantasy on Twitter now, right now. Like, go on Twitter right after you hear this to learn more and get yours today. If you want to succeed in sports betting in your fantasy basketball leagues this year, this is a no-brainer. Again, go to Twitter right now at HoopBall Fantasy or go to hoop-ball.com and get right today.
The following is a HoopBall presentation.
Plays it into Trey. 2 seconds wide. Trey Slaughter. Good! With 0.1! And the Hawks are going to win this game. Shot clock at 5. It's poked away. Cam comes up with it. And stops it. Came up shy. Another lob. Collins up high. Picked up by Tatum. Slaps it. Can't get it. Kevin lets it fly. Swish!
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Hello and welcome back to HoopBall Hawks, the show that is taking flight here on the HoopBall Network, where we cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. I'm host Brad Harden, recording live from Atlanta, Georgia, and the Hawks have closed out preseason game number 3 last night against the Memphis Grizzlies, and spoiler alert, it was ugly. But good, bad, and the ugly, we'll cover it all for the Hawks. Second half of the show, we have a special guest to talk about the game briefly, but he's really here to drop some fantasy basketball and sports betting nuggets on us regarding the Hawks players. So stay tuned for that, and we will talk about last night's game, but first, a quick plug for MyBookie. If you like losing money, turn this off right now. But if you love free bands, just like Super Future, then keep listening. Sports betting is getting huge across the nation, and all of my homies love to bet on games. There are a bunch of sites out there for sports betting, but all of my homies love MyBookie. Why? Because it's so easy to use. And since y'all my homies too, I'm going to plug you. All my homies listening right now can sign up for MyBookie with the promo code HoopBall to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus. 100%, just like an A+ in school. Hopefully you got them, but if not, this your chance to get 100%. You like playing blackjack? There are some very fun and free blackjack tournaments, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much that you can do on MyBookie, and the best thing is, is that no cash is required to enter, and you can win up to $100 in daily challenges and up to $1,000 in weekly tournaments. So you want a chance at free cash money? Then again, my homies, sign up with the promo code HOOPBALL to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus and try to score some, in the words of Future, like I said earlier, free band, free band. And we are back, and last night, ladies and gentlemen, it was ugly. I know it was a preseason game, and sometimes whoopings in sports are the best way to learn and the best film to correct from, but it was ugly. And I hope this injects a sense of urgency into the team, especially with a shortened preseason and training camp, and with the Hawks' first regular season game being on Tuesday. I'd rather us get beat like this in preseason, where the record doesn't count against us, than in the regular season. I'm sure that we'll have some games like this in the regular season as well, but this is good to correct from and build off of and get better from. And there was some good last night, as two of the three of the Magic City trio and Hunter and Reddish continued to play great, play aggressive, and continue to show signs of improvement from year one to year two. Clint Capella continues to play well despite coming into the game with an Achilles issue that was nagging him. Rajon Rondo suited up for the Hawks for the first time last night, looked well with the second unit, putting up 7 assists, which will be great for our second unit going forward. But unfortunately last night, the bad did outweigh the good, unfortunately. So going into the game, the keys that I saw for the Hawks in order to win this game: protect the paint, force outside shots. They protected the paint fairly well compared to what Memphis normally does. But in the part of forcing outside shots, they shot a lot of outside shots and had a lot of open shots and ended up hitting a whole bunch of threes last night. And we'll get to the numbers later. Continue to build continuity. Sometimes the bad games, in order to look in the mirror and correct some mistakes, it helps build continuity even further. Helps, you know, hold people accountable, challenge people, and we'll see what comes from that. Push the pace. They definitely tried to do that. Be aggressive on both ends of the court and compete. I did not see that last night, unfortunately, for the whole entire game. Out-rebound no Grizzlies. They did not do that. Cut down turnovers. They did do that. Have our front court beat the Grizzlies' front court, which was kind of depleted going into the game and did have a lack of size. Well, they did get Brandon Clark back, and Valanciunas was a mountain of a man in the middle, and he pretty much could do whatever he wanted. And I'll talk about that a little later. I needed Collins to win his matchup on the court. I don't think he did that. Trey versus Ja, who was going to win out? Ja won, and the Grizzlies won the game. Collins versus Valanciunas and Capella versus Valanciunas, either or, whoever was on him. Valanciunas won. I'll get to his stats later. Continue to improve on the defensive end. We were challenged because of what the Grizzlies could do with the ability of Ja Morant to penetrate the paint and stress defenses. And it was going to be a challenge like we have not seen, obviously, this preseason, but just a challenge in general because of how talented Ja Morant is and the pieces that he has around him in Memphis. And we did not meet that challenge. And unfortunately, throughout the game, it got progressively worse. It continued to improve three-point shooting, which was bad last night. And going into the game, the injury report had Chris Dunn out, Onyeka Okongwu out, and Tony Snell out. No surprises there. Available, as I said, Clint Capella had an Achilles issue going into the game. He was available last night. Cameron Herter had an ankle issue. He was available. Cam Reddish had an ankle issue. He was available. And Rondo was available as well. So more pieces on the chessboard for them last night, even though they all were kind of hobbled in some way. The starting lineup last night was Trae Young at the 1, Bogdan Bogdanovic at the 2, DeAndre Hunter at the 3, John Collins at the 4, and Clint Capella at the 5. And as I said before, the Hawks did lose to the Grizzlies. They lost 128-106. And at one point, the Grizzlies did have a 29-point lead. Hawks shot poor from the field last night, shooting 38% from the field and almost 29% from 3. So bad shooting night. And the Grizzlies shot 47% from the field and 38% from 3 and made 19 three-pointers in the game. So they really shot very well last night. They got hot. in stretches throughout the game last night, which really put us behind the eight ball. We cut down our turnovers, only committing 12, but ultimately that did not make much of a difference in the game. We were out-rebounded the first time in the preseason, 58-46. We were out-rebounded both defensively and offensively. So we took a step back there. We had 9 steals, which was a plus, and 7 blocks, but that's pretty much it. Just a good stat that didn't really translate into any impact on the scoreboard, unfortunately. Individually for the Grizzlies, Ja Morant continued his stellar play in the preseason, scoring 18 points and posting 13 assists and adding 4 rebounds and 2 steals. Great game from Ja Morant. He was a really, really positive impact on that court, as he always is for the Grizzlies. Valanciunas, who I mentioned, continued to play great in the preseason, scoring 20 points last night, adding 13 rebounds. He was 100% from the free throw line, 4 for 4, 100% from 3, 2 for 2. And 7-9 from the field. He was basically getting any and everything he wanted last night, and certainly was a challenge to stop. It didn't matter who was on him. Capella, Collins, Fernando. He was getting anything and, you know, taking whatever the defense was giving him. So he had a really good game. He'll be a really good fantasy pickup, as our guest later in the show will talk about his value. Dylan Brooks was hot from the field last night. He was hot in game 2 of the preseason, and that continued in game 3 last night, scoring 24 points on 10 of 15 shooting and 4 of 8 from 3. Rookie Desmond Bane added 10 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists off the bench, who I really was high on Desmond Bane as a late round draft pick, and was hoping that if the Hawks did make a trade back in the draft or got a late first round pick, that Desmond Bane would get picked up by the Hawks, but we did not get him, and that's fine. I'm happy with what we have in the draft, but the Grizzlies would certainly love what Desmond Bane brings to them. Kyle Anderson, a.k.a. Slow-Mo, because of how he plays, scored 11 points and added 7 rebounds. So it was a complete team performance for the Grizzlies, and they certainly caught the Hawks on half a tank, in my opinion, as they just did not have the same energy, effort, and that pep in their step as they did in the first two games. For the Hawks, best player tonight, wasn't even close, DeAndre Hunter, who was great again. Continues to be great this preseason, shooting the ball very, very well. Led the team last night in scoring with 22 points on 8 of 15 shooting from the field and shot 5 of 8 from 3. And I continue to just love what I'm seeing from him. Being aggressive, shooting well, playing hard on the defensive end as he's taking that challenge and trying to be the best defensive player on this Hawks roster. Continues to try to drive the lane and get into the paint and finish at the cup and try to put himself at the free throw line, which is going to really open things up in his game and open up things for the Hawks as well offensively. So really love what I'm seeing from Hunter. Has to continue this play, and I think he will. Trae Young struggled with his shot last night, scoring 15 points on 4 of 15 shooting. It was 2 of 8 from 3. He was 5 of 5 from the free throw line, added 6 assists, 4 rebounds, and cut his turnovers down to 2, which was great. And I love seeing that. But he struggled from the field, like I said. And as I said before, Ja Morant certainly won this matchup tonight. And I expect Trae Young to take this to heart on Saturday and rebound as the Hawks do get another chance to go against this Grizzlies team tomorrow. Capella continued playing well, scoring 13 points of 5 and 9 shooting. Hit all of his free throws, grabbed 9 boards, and had 2 blocks. But, as I said, he did struggle against Valanciunas, who definitely had the hot hand last night for the Grizzlies in the paint. John Collins, who I was hoping to have a very good performance this game and really take advantage of the matchups given to him, didn't do that. He struggled, scoring 10 points on 4 of 10 shooting, and went 0-for from the 3-point line. And as well as went 50% from the free throw line, which he has to get better at. And I know he's better than that. He grabbed 7 boards and added 3 assists and had 1 steal. He only had 2 fouls, which I like seeing that he was trying to defend without fouling. But he still seems uncomfortable inside the 3-point line with Capella on the floor and in the paint, which is something that will have to continue to work itself out to find the spots where he can be effective outside of the paint, while still getting his opportunities inside the paint to open up better looks from 3. And hopefully he can continue to be confident with that 3-point stroke, as he was a 40% 3-point shooter last year. Bogdanović struggled yesterday, shooting 4 of 11 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, and only scored 9 points. but grabbed 7 rebounds and added 2 assists. So he still tried to work through that, and he caught on late, which I love seeing him trying to do things to still try to get himself in rhythm. And as I said, he was scoring late, which hopefully can get him in a rhythm going into the next game against the Grizzlies tomorrow. Gallinari only scored 8 points off the bench, shot 2 of 8 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3 as well, just like Bogey. And his shot just wasn't there. And he's going to have nights like that. We can't expect to have the great performances night in and night out from Gallinari. Every night is just unrealistic. He's going to have some nights where he struggles. So it's going to happen. I expect those two to rebound as they are a little more tenured in this league. And I'm not really worried about Cam Reddish. After not playing last game against the Magic, he returned, scored 10 points off the bench, shot 50% from the field and 50% from the three-point line, which was great. Added 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals. Played with great energy and focus, and he was all in. And he was one of the bright spots last night. Just giving his effort, continuing to try to round in the form and show everybody that he's going to have a good year 2 for the Hawks. As I said before, Rajon Rondo got on the court finally, scored 3 points, which was one deep 3-point shot that he had, and added 7 assists off the bench. And I just can't wait to see him get settled in with this bench and with the rest of the team on the court. As once they kind of get to speed as to where he is and his tendencies and how he's going to play, I think he's going to really open up things offensively for the Hawks. And then once he gets more time on the court, that's going to help on the defensive end as well. Kevin Huerter added 6 points last night, and he struggled with a shot as well, shooting 3 of 12 from the field and 0 for and missing 6 three-point shots last night. He dished out 4 assists, grabbed 3 rebounds, and had 2 steals, but he struggled as well, but he had an ankle ailment going into the game. So only 37 points from our bench last night compared to 46 bench points for the Grizzlies. And their starters outscored our starters. So culminated in a big blowout win for the Grizzlies in game 1. But like I said, we have a chance to rebound in game 2. My takeaways from last night, again, 2 of 3 for the Magic City Trio. Continue to play aggressive. Continue to try to get themselves going in year 2. And DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish playing hard on both ends of the court. Especially defensively with Cam Reddish getting steals and trying to facilitate, playing hard, getting to the rim, shooting the ball with confidence. Same thing with DeAndre Hunter. I love seeing it. I need to see Huerter, who had a good game 1, try to pick it up as well, because the other two young wings for the Hawks are trying to make a statement early on in this preseason as the regular season nears. The team just did not play with the same energy in the first 2 games. They weren't going for as many loose balls, weren't tenacious on the boards like they were in game 1 and 2, not closing out shooters, which led to open threes all night long for the Memphis Grizzlies. So just didn't have that same energy, that same pep in the step. And Neek commented on the broadcast that they looked a step slower, especially in the second half. So that's something that I hope changes in game 4 and they play with more energy and effort no matter who was on the court. I imagine they'll give some people the night off to rest and heal up leading up into the first regular season game. But whoever's on the court, I want to see a better competitive effort and spirit going into tomorrow's game. As I said, a positive, Rondo is back. His impact was felt. He's going to be good, and I continue to watch how that plays out with Gallinari, Reddish, Huerter, and whoever is on the second unit, Fernando, and how they really gel together throughout the season. They had a really bad third quarter, a lot of missed shots, and the Grizzlies really pushed the break and got a lot of easy looks from all those missed shots and some turnovers. Only scored 17 points in the third quarter, went 6 of 23 from the field, 3 of 11 from 3, and was 2 of 4 from the free throw line. So not a great third quarter, which led to the Grizzlies getting out to that 29-point lead. Defense was poor at best last night. Like I said, a lot of easy looks in the paint for the Grizzlies, a lot of open threes. And as I said, the Grizzlies were hot from the three-point line, making 19 last night out of 50. The Grizzlies won the points in the paint margin, which I said that we needed to control going into the game, as the Grizzlies like to get into the paint. But they only won that margin by 6 points, which surprised me, because that just means that the 3-point barrage that the Grizzlies were putting up really had a huge influence on that game last night. And when it got bad last night, boy, did it get bad. But I'm going to take in consideration that we still do not have everybody available and we have some players banged up. So that definitely probably played a factor, but I would like to see them turn things around in the next game against the Grizzlies. Trae Young was hot early, but ended up cooling off. And I thought when he struggled with his shot, he missed some opportunities to get his teammates really going last night. Or, you know, feeding the hot hand like a DeAndre Hunter, who was hot last night shooting, or a Cam Reddish, who shot pretty well from the floor last night, but was limited with only 6 shots total. That's something that I want to see improve from Trae Young, is that when he's not going, get other people going to get the team, you know, sparked. Maybe give some effort on the defensive end, which led to a steal or something. That sparks a run in his team as the leader. We expect more out of Trae Young, and I will hope to see more from him in that regard, especially with Rondo on the roster. And you have Nate McMillan, who was a guard in his league for a lot of years. With both of them in his ear and, you know, the yearning for him to learn and grow and get better, I expect for him to clean that up. And I love that he cleaned up the turnover, and I hope to see that continue going into the regular season. Both of our 2 guards struggled last night, in Bogey and Hunter, as I mentioned, but they got it going late, which it was good for me to see them continue to compete, even though they struggled. And I think that hopefully this is a precursor into them getting into rhythm, heading into the game tomorrow against the Grizzlies, and I expect them to play better, point blank, period. Collins needs to find his spots a little closer to the basket to open up his 3-point shot, as I said, especially when a 3-point shot is not going in. I think the spacing, he's still trying to work out and trying to figure out the territory between him and Capella when they're on the floor. That will continue to be a work in progress. And I was really hoping to see him dominate tonight. Let's see if he really gets it going in game 4 and gets a little fire underneath him to really dominate that matchup against Brandon Clark. I am excited for when we get Onyeka Okongwu back and Chris Dunn back for defensive purposes, as they were not available. We certainly could use some defense last night. They're going to have to get in shape and, you know, integrate themselves into this lineup, into the rotations. So it's going to be a work in progress, but I'm excited to have them back because we really needed them last night defensively. That was all my takeaways from last night. They have a chance to rebound tomorrow against the Grizzlies again. With that, we're going to move on to the conversation with our guest and talk about fantasy basketball in regards to the Hawks and some odds. But first, a plug for Manscaped. Support from Hoopball Hawks comes from Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. As we are in the holiday season, with all the shopping, chestnuts roasting on open fires, as Jingle Bells plays on almost every radio station, don't forget your jingle balls. Untrimmed pubes are a thing of the past. It's time to gear up and get yourself the gift of shaving this holiday season. I am talking about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. We all know of a guy who had a tragic grooming story to try to impress his lady, or you personally, where you clip the wrong thing and you start the Will Smith, "See what had happened was..." Well, see, what should have happened was you copping Manscaped for your grooming needs. This revolutionary company has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 3.0 has a proprietary advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer cuts on your nuts. And it's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand new Perfect Package 3.0. which makes for the perfect gift this holiday season. It's literally everything you need to keep trim, cut free, and smelling nice down there. And don't use the same trimmer on your face as your jingle balls. That's a technical foul! The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? Yeah, your jingle balls do stink. I don't care if you just showered. Speaking of sweaty, stinky jingle balls, I am thankful for their Crop Reviver. This product, along with the Crop Preserver, keeps your balls from sweating, smelling, and sticking. And these products smell good, my friends. Good. Their manly scent is attractive and will help you set the mood, if you know what I mean. The perfect package will also come with a pair of Manscaped boxers that'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day long, baby. It's time to upgrade those used pair of boxers to Manscaped's high-performance anti-chafing boxers. So, 'tis the season to manscape. So get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends, don't matter, the best gift of all, the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. Your jingle balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com when you use the code HOOPBALL20. Clean up your jingle balls, and I guarantee you will make the nice list this year for Christmas. Hello and welcome back to Hoop Ball Hawks, the show here on the Hoop Ball Network that is taking flight, where we cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. This is the second part of this episode where I brought a very special guest. He was so gracious enough to have me come on his show and talk something other than the Atlanta Hawks, talk the entire basketball association, talk some college hoops and NFL. As a former football player, it's always nice to talk about some football. So without further ado, one of my esteemed colleagues here at Hoop Ball, part of Hoop Ball Gaming, Mr. Devin Ellington. Devin, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, Brad, I'm just peachy, getting, you know, some sports in here nice and early, talking some college basketball over on the Hoop Ball Gaming Show. Going to talk some more Hawks with you, go over the box score, I assume, from last night. I think we got some gambling nuggets that we were going to look into for some season awards, but not to spoil too much as your guest. No, I'm doing great. I'm glad to be on here. My first time on Hoop Ball Hawks. Like I told you, I love the show. I love your content. So I'm excited that the cross-potting is continuing.
Man, I appreciate those words of, you know, admiration, man. And I love the work that you're doing on your show as well. And it's okay if you're spoiling. I like to give my listeners somewhat of a heading as to where we're going. And we've already covered it in the first half of the episode, but we're going to bring it up since we have Devin up. Hawks lose 128-106 last night. A poor shooting night, poor on a defensive end. Just seemed to step slower than the Grizzlies last night, who were led by Ja Morant, who had 18 points, 13 assists, adding 4 rebounds and 2 steals. Valanciunas, who I thought was going to be a key last night for the Grizzlies, he played great and continued his great play in the preseason, scoring 20 points, adding 13 boards, was 100% from the free throw line. He was 2-for-2 from the three-point line, shot 7-of-9 from the field. Dylan Brooks shot really well last night, 4-of-8 from the three-point line, 10-of-15 from the field, 24 points. Desmond Bane, a rookie who I really like, had 10-of-6 and added 3 assists off the bench. Kyle Anderson played well. So complete team performance for the Grizzlies. Best player for the Hawks was DeAndre Hunter, scoring 22 points on 8-of-15 shooting, shooting 5-of-8 from 3. I loved what I've been seeing from him. Trae Young struggled with his shot, still getting 15 points, adding 6 assists and 4 rebounds. Capella continued to play well, adding 13 points and 9 boards with 2 blocks. JC struggled. So struggle was the theme last night. What did you – I know it's a preseason game. We're not going to read too much into the numbers. I can get into all the numbers we talked about in the first half of the show, but – Devin, watching the game, was there anything that deterred you on the side of the Hawks? And obviously, since you look at the entire association, what encouraged you for the Hawks as well? And you can talk about the Grizzlies. The floor is basically yours as far as what you saw and what to take away from the game last night.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, you know, at the expense of your Hawks, I liked Valanciunas doing what he was doing because, you know, we talked a little on and off air the last couple of days, but he's a part of my you know, we established my team name for the fantasy basketball team yesterday, the Flying V's.
Yes.
And, you know, Valanciunas is a part of that construct. So it's encouraging for me to see that from him. I think the topic of bringing Desmond Bane up is awesome. You know, he played in the Big 12. Like I talked yesterday on the show with you, I'm in the Big 12 country, county, whatever you want to call it. And I think it was cool to see him get some run. A kid that I was really excited for coming in the NBA, just like you are. Something that kind of surprised me was Brandon. Well, and now that I bring it up and I'm talking out loud about it, doesn't surprise me as much because he's going to be important to this team, especially with Jaren Jackson out. But the fact that Brandon Clark only got 18 minutes, I thought that was kind of a little weird. I thought maybe he'd get about 20, 21 to help get him ramped up. And, you know, Desmond Bane got more minutes than Clark and Valanciunas. And I know Clark's a 4, not a 5 traditionally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Valanciunas led the team in 28 minutes. So that's kind of weird in my opinion there. And then, you know, to the Hawks, I think basically off of what we talked about yesterday with the youthfulness and the defense and what we were wanting to see from this team, all those concerns were warranted because, as we saw, you know, the defensive effort wasn't really there last night in this game. And looking into the box score, you know, you touched on DeAndre Hunter, you know, hitting 5 of 8 3-point. The fact that he took the same number of threes as Trae Young and hit more, shot 62% from the perimeter, you know, that's a little weird there. Still didn't get, you know, he got the one steal, but, you know, in college, it just seemed like every game he was getting a steal and a block, you know, before halftime. So I want to see him be able to try to do that in the NBA. Another thing I want to point out, and this kind of speaks on maybe, you know, some effort, Bogey went ahead and got him a steal and a block, a couple offensive rebounds. Additions that we talked about yesterday with Bogdanovich and Gallo and whatnot, the fact that these guys are veterans and can come in and show the younger guys what it's like to give some energy. You know, Bogdanovich isn't a guy that gets offensive rebounds, but look, he went out and got 2. So I think that these older guys, the veterans, the guys that the pieces that were added, you know, they're trying to, you know, get the young guys pretty much just all the way on board here, kind of lead by example. Yes. You had Bogey play 27 minutes. Gallo only got 19. So that was kind of weird. 1 for 5 from the 3-point line, 2 for 8 from the field, 25%. Every Hawk had a minus on the plus minus. A lot of people hate that stat, but to me, it's a little eye-opening as far as, you know, efficiency as a team or floor percentages. So that was my general overlook, just the fact that they didn't come through and play defense like we were hoping they would. They didn't hit, you know, shots when they needed to. And then as a team, so they hit 19 of 22, 86%. So we were talking about the additions of the veterans yesterday and the effects it has on the free throw shooting. So at least they stepped up their game in that department.
Yes.
38% from the field, though, just isn't going to cut it.
No, absolutely not. And then shooting 29% from 3, it's not going to cut it. I know, and to speak to the free throw shooting, they shot about 83% game 1. It dipped down to 67% in game 2 and went back up last night. But you got to shoot well when, you know, play isn't stopped. You got to shoot well between the whistles, you know what I'm saying? And they did not do that last night. They did cut down the turnovers, which I wanted to see and we talked about, but it didn't make a difference in last night's game. And they out-rebounded the Magic in the first 2 games and then ended up getting out-rebounded last night. So just the energy and the effort was not there the entire game. And the third quarter, when shots weren't falling, it just seemed like it just got from bad to worse real quickly. But it was good to see Rondo on the court. You know, he had 3 points in that one, and that 3-point was 1 3-point shot from deep, which I like to see him having the confidence to shoot a few feet behind the 3-point line, and he added 7 assists off the bench. So I can't wait to see him get settled in with this team on the court and really, you know, continue to learn their tendencies while he's on there, while he's healthy, while he's able-bodied. You mentioned Bogey and Gallo. You expect more out of them. Reddish did play with a lot of energy off the bench, scoring 10 points, shooting 50% from the field and 50% from the 3-point line, adding 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals. So he definitely brought it. DeAndre Hunter definitely brought it, but for the rest of the team, they did seem a little flat. So they're going to have to pick it up on both ends when they play tomorrow against the Grizzlies. And it's got to be a better team effort. It got to be a better team effort. They got to keep Ja Morant out the paint. They have to close out three-point shooters. There was a lot of open three-point shots that the Grizzlies got last night. So they're just going to just have to clean up some things from last night. So I've talked about it ad nauseum in the first part of this episode. So we're going to move on to fantasy basketball. You mentioned percentages, and percentages are huge in fantasy basketball. So when you look at the Hawks and people who have fantasy drafts that are here in the next few days leading up to the tip-off of the NBA basketball season, I know that with the promise that the Hawks show, they're going to want to see, like, hey, there may be a couple Hawks players that we need to grab. So, Devin, in your opinion, who are must-grabs for the Hawks this year in fantasy?
Well, I think without a doubt, especially if you're in a keeper league, and if you're in a keeper or a dynasty league, he probably elevated within the rankings, probably closer to the top five, top seven, and that's Trae Young, obviously.
Burr.
I mean, you've got to talk about him. And then John Collins, I've been seeing him go in the second round in a lot of these leagues. Depending on category setup and all that good stuff, I've seen John Collins go at the end of the first round ahead of guys like Jason Tatum and Devin Booker. Yeah. So,
and I wanted to ask a quick question about that, because I know that in my mock drafts, I've seen JC, he's fallen to me, but I think about the team dynamic and the structure with the depth and the minutes and whatnot and how he's looked in the preseason. I'm not trying to look too much in the preseason, but trying to get into a rhythm as to where he is going to be effective on the court. And it's kind of deterred me. Should that scare people in the audience as far as with John Collins, or, you know, where they see him in mock drafts, where they see him in the rankings, be confident in taking him because he will show up? Because I've seen that he could potentially be in top 20 as far as in nine category leagues.
Yeah. You know, this guy, the amount of potential that he has is ridiculous. You know, we saw it before and after his suspension for, I think it was the PED use last year.
Yes.
You know, and that was a real bummer. I liked the kid coming out of college. I just love his game. I would like to see him play a little bit more defensively. So I think whenever you get into smaller category size leagues, you know, like your 8-9 cats, I think he's a little bit more valuable because you know, those defensive stats. Well, I mean, here, let me backtrack, because those defensive stats are going to be a part of whatever category, 8, 9, 10, 11 category league you're in. So I'm going to backtrack and I'm going to reverse course. I think he would actually be more valuable in the higher categories because he is a more well-rounded player and he's not going to be a detriment to your team in regards to any percentages, really. I mean, he has a great mid-range game. He gets to the cup when he can and when he wants. Trey can find, you know, dribble, drive, penetrate, kick to him out on the three-point line, and he's not going to shoot 25% from the perimeter. He's going to be, you know, upper 30s, maybe even, you know, hit 40% this year if he's been working on his shot. You know, for a big man, that's pretty great.
Yeah, and then, you know, he was 40% last year.
Okay, he was, yeah. I wasn't sure if he finished just south of 40, but yeah, I mean, this is a big man, a power forward that could get you, you know, 41%. On three-pointers. Free throw shooting, he's pretty solid at that. In that department, he went 2-4 last night. Obviously, you want to see a little bit more consistency with that. But as far as his game, I think he's very team-friendly. Mm-hmm. I'm a guy who I preach value, and I do that on the Hoopball Gaming Show. It's all about value and conviction. And it's no different whenever you're drafting your fantasy football, basketball, baseball, hockey teams. You've got value-based picks, and you've got conviction-based picks. But your best picks are going to be the ones where it complements both of those dynamics. And for John Collins, just to kind of let you know where I was at, he got picked two spots before I picked Vucevic. And so it went Collins, Siakam, Vuce, and I'm in that 11-cat league that I was telling you about yesterday. Mm-hmm. And then at the turn for the third round, I went ahead and went Brandon Ingram, but if Collins was still there, I have no qualms going Vooch Collins to set myself up there with the 2-3 at the turn because I had the number one overall pick.
That sounds and really good right there.
Right, yeah. And I was looking at John Collins. And then to pair that with my number one pick of James Harden, you know, I thought that would have been a cool, solid first three. I mean, I still like my first three right now, But if I would have been able to get John Collins in the third, granted, it's the first pick of the third, but it's still a third round pick. He's going to, I think, do better than a third round pick this year.
So you've talked me back into it. Yeah. Cause I have an opportunity at thinking what I've seen in mock drafts, and I'll do a couple more before my drafts. I think I'll definitely take a flyer out on him. So I know that Capella's been drafted in the leagues that I've seen. I've seen that they've had Gallinari pretty high. Bogdanovich has been in the 100s in Yahoo's rankings. And then right outside of that, they have Reddish and Hunter and Herter, the Magic City trio, them young wings for the Hawks. So any of those players are must grabs, or you say to be cautious with any of those because of the minutes and rotation?
The caution will probably come to the younger guys, because I think we're still a year out before we see an exemplary and immense amount of their development kind of just explode. We might see it towards the back end of this year, but with all these veteran pieces that were brought in, I think it's going to be more of a structure-based around learning curve this year for these younger guys. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to take a lot of the fantasy-friendly elements out of their game. So the guys and the veterans, you know, like the Bogdanoviches, you know, Bogey just went in the 10th round in my, or here, yeah, 10th round. Gallo went in the 9th round to the same team. So at the end, or the beginning of the 9th, end of the 10th. Gallo was the first pick in the 9th. Bogdanovich was the last pick in the 10th. So 9th, 10th grade value on these guys, I think that's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I was going to take a stab at Bogey if I could get him with the 11th round pick. And then I was being a little more stingy if I could just have him fall to me in the 12th, because like I said, I'm the guy that just, I love to collect value. If I can get value with all my picks, you know, I'm solid. So instead of getting y'all's Bogdanovich, I went ahead and went with Bojan Bogdanovich on the 11th round draft pick. And, you know, those two guys are very similar. They obviously last names, they're very similar, but playing wise, playing style, free throw percentages always through the roof and good, solid offensive player. Defensive stats really aren't going to be there. They have a couple of turnovers here and there because they're not used to being the ball handler, the playmaker. They can hit threes when they need to. They're not going to kill you in that department. And then also the assists, you know, come from time to time.
Yes.
But with that being said, if you can get that kind of veteran presence with the 20 to 25 minute mark, and, you know, we said Bogdanovich, you know, he played 27 minutes last night. If you get that kind of value and safety, especially in a year like 2020, in a position where he's in a better position than he was in Sacramento, I think that's huge for 10th or 11th round value for both of these guys, and Gallinari and Bogdanovich. Gallo, you know, if you're building your team around free throws, he's a great guy to add in the 10th or 11th round.
Yes.
I mean, he's a 90% free throw shooter, pretty much. I think he's like 89 or something for his career. But, I mean, he doesn't really miss. He's got great true shooting percentages, so therefore his mid-range game is good. He's got a great pull-up. And then he's also got a stroke from deep, as we've seen time in and time out from his rookie season on. So I love these guys, especially around the 10th and the 11th rounds. John Collins, if you can get him in the third round, that is just phenomenal. I think that's the way to go. And then Clint Capella, just to speak real briefly on him, he went in the 4th round, right before my pick of Jonas Valanciunas. Since we were talking about the Memphis and Hawks game, I figured it'd be a great time to kind of bring up perpendiculars and parallels here. Clint Capella is obviously going to give you a little more of those defensive stats. My worry with him is, and I would like to take him in the 5th round. That's kind of where my value cap is on him. My worry is, did we see the best of his athleticism in Houston? Is he going to have a curve downward with what his usage is, what his expectations are, and then his athleticism and his explosiveness? So I'm curious to see how he fits in and meshes and gels here in Atlanta. I like his opportunity and his upside, but not in the 4th round when I could have gotten Valanciunas. So,
Yeah. And I got Capella in one of my mock drafts. I think I'm going to say in the fifth or sixth round. So I got him a little bit later. And I thought that that was a good value for me to get him later. So
absolutely.
You definitely gave some wonderful nuggets. It sounds like for the Magic City Trio, if they're one of your last picks that you're going to just kind of stash and hold and see how they, you know, develop and how the minutes and rotations develop in Atlanta throughout the season, it might be a good stash and hold, or they may be some waiver wire players that you star and just continue to watch. And if you see a trend upward, go ahead and grab them. So we'll try to, throughout the season, get Devin on here to kind of give those nuggets as far as where are the Hawks players at? Are they trending upward? Are they trending downward? Is it trying to move on, trade from them? And I think that that would just be a wonderful addition to this program, because not everybody on here watches Hawks games as a fan. Some of them are watching them for other purposes, and we want to try to tap into those audiences. So I appreciate that insight, Devin. I'm definitely going to take that into my strategy as far as with mock drafting, because I'm trying to win my leagues. You hear that, David Bracey? I'm trying to win the league. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to give me a trophy. So we'll move on from fantasy and talk about the odds game. No copyright intended, but you know what? It's the odds game. We have some odds to throw at you as far as with postseason accolades and, you know, season accolades regarding the Atlanta Hawks. And so we're going to talk through them with Devin to see, do you take those odds? We're going to start off with the lowest odds, which are Defensive Player of the Year. Clint Capella at 80-1 odds for Defensive Player of the Year. I've already gone on record and said I think that this is going to be an award that Anthony Davis is going to lock up because of him getting slighted, in my opinion, last year to Giannis Antetokounmpo being the DPOY. But 80-1 odds for Capella, do you think that's fair? Do you think that's optimistic? What do you think about those odds?
Yeah, you know, I think that's pretty fair. I think that's kind of where he is. I mentioned my concerns with the capped athleticism and what we might have seen. And then real quick, while I think we're both looking at the Vegas Insiders rankings on, or the odds on this.
Yes.
Find Matisse Thybulle's name and tell me the typo that you see, because I'm trying not to let it distract me. He's above Jimmy Butler, between him and Jrue Holiday. 70-1.
Oh, my God.
Matisse Thybulle.
Thybullen. But I mean, he'd be bullying on the floor.
Yeah. I'm not sure how they let that one slip through the cracks. Yes. I'm the guy that notices that kind of stuff. I'll sit there and I'll be reading an article through ESPN and there's a grammatical, like a comma or something. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's ESPN. How could they get this wrong?
Yeah, so maybe these odds shouldn't be trusted, but
no, these guys are great. I just wanted to make fun of the typo. Anthony Davis 25-1. I think you lock that up.
Yes.
+250. That, I mean, I think that is the way to go. Like you said, he got slighted last year. Probably should have won it. I think he missed a few more games than what Giannis did. That might have been the reason why. Or they also just kind of wanted to keep the Giannis narrative going because they thought that Milwaukee might have had a chance of winning last year. I don't know. So again, NBA is really weird. With
so their again, they're trying to disrespect the Lakers.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's why LeBron said what he said after they won the title. We want the Laker Nation wants their, you know, their expletive respect. I don't know if I can say that on this program. And he wants his respect as well. And AD deserved a lot more respect as he was great on the defensive end and really the catalyst for that Lakers team. Mm-hmm. The next award, Rookie of the Year. We haven't seen him on Onyeka Okongwu. I love him. I think he's going to be really good. And we talk about Clint Capella's capped athleticism. I think Okongwu will come in and kind of replace some of that athleticism in the front court along with Bruno Fernando. And I think he's going to be even more athletic than Bruno Fernando, but we still haven't seen him. So I'm going to withhold any, you know, precursors into that conversation. But for Rookie of the Year, Onyeka Okongwu has the seventh highest odds to reach Rookie of the Year. And I need to pull up the exact fraction for that, unless you have it. If not,
I'm seeing 20-1.
20-1
+2,000. Mm-hmm.
Yes. What do you think of those odds?
So for me, you know, he's at those odds for a reason. I loved him at USC. But for me, he doesn't have the offensive upside or the skill sets right now that you need to push through in order to become the rookie of the year. My thing is, though, there is some value there, because if Capella doesn't do what he's expected to do, if that athleticism truly is capped, and then Okungwu just comes in and just runs with the job, and then him and John Collins paired next to each other are just great, and you know, he comes out of the woodwork and just goes bonkers. I could honestly still see that happening. But, you know, the guys ahead of him, and I'm just kind of try to play devil's advocate here. You know, Avdija, something like that. He's 20-1 also, but I think he's kind of buried in Washington. So I think there's more value with Onyeka. Killian Hayes, the Pistons, plus 950. So what is that? That'd be 95 or plus 950. Man, I am terrible at 200-1. I'm sorry.
You're better than me. I'm impressed.
200-1. Yeah, I moved too many zeros. So Killian Hayes, 95-1. Obi Toppin, 70-1. Here's what my biggest discrepancy with this is. LaMelo Ball should not be the headliner. He should not be plus 390. Sure, he's flashy. He's showgunny. He's going to do all the passing and this and that. But that's all. Like, he's going to be worrying about trying to put on a show every single time that he touches the ball. And we've seen it time and time again with these Charlotte rookies that they bring in with these crazy offensive skill sets, all the way back to Kemba Walker. They don't really pan out for the scouting, the development in the front office that Michael Jordan's put together in Charlotte. They don't take their talent and they don't take them to the next level. They don't elevate them. And then not to mention, they brought in Gordon Hayward, which, I mean, he's injured, but, and then they got a couple of other pieces around LaMelo Ball still, who still want the ball in their hands, like Terry Rozier.
And Devonte Graham.
You're just going to throw Devonte Graham to the wayside and under the cupboard after what he did for you last year? I mean,
and he arguably got slighted for most improved player.
Yeah, absolutely. He went from averaging 2 points a game to what, 26 a game? Yeah, absolutely.
It was in the 20s. Yeah, he was a 20-point scorer last year.
Anthony Edwards, I think out of the top three, out of LaMelo being plus 390, I'm not touching LaMelo at all. I don't like him. I like his brother a little bit more. Their dad's obviously annoying. Say what you want about the ball, BBB, whatever. Whoever has
an opinion. I like LaVar.
What he's doing, let's just say he's like the modern age Joe Jackson.
Hey, but at least as far as we know, he ain't beat the ball, brother.
As far as we know, yes. I really love Anthony Edwards. I love this kid. I fell in love with him. The first Georgia game I watched in their early season game last year against Oregon, I think it was, in a tournament. James Wiseman, I think they're probably going to try to thrust too much on the kid, and he's probably going to get injured. You know, he played like, what, two college games? He has a lot of development to go as far as pure raw talent. Sure, he deserves to be third in this. I like Obi Toppin plus 70, or at plus 770-1 odds. And here's my thinking. They have so much washed out talent ahead of him. Kevin Knox, go ahead and get rid of him. He's a bust. You've got guys that are aging, like, you know, well, you got Julius Randle, who just thinks he's a and-one mixtape tour point guard every time he gets the ball coming down the court as a power forward or a center. Then you've got guys that don't give effort on rebounding. Obi Toppin, I think he has a chance of averaging like 3 offensive rebounds a game this year, just because of how big his frame is, how he is at boxing out. He was coached really well at Dayton. And here's another cool thing. He could be the first New York Knicks player to win Rookie of the Year since Mark Jackson in 1987, if he wins. So I like the history. I like the story. I like the narrative. Give me Obi Toppin for a little sprinkle at 70-1. And then I'm going to go ahead and also take a more serious sprinkle on Anthony Edwards at plus 480, because I think Anthony Edwards actually is the one that's going to win Rookie of the Year. He just, you know, if Minnesota just doesn't screw him up with minutes and rotation.
I agree with you. I think Wiseman is a safer bet right now, especially with, you know, Ball not being in the starting lineup. That might change this year. And I'm actually pretty, I'm not, I'm actually higher on LaMelo Ball than I am on Anthony Edwards just because of what's between the ears. And I know that people criticize LaMelo Ball on his maturity and they don't know exactly. They say, oh, he's immature, but I'm like, but the kid's 19. The same thing with Anthony Edwards. But the thing about Ball is that Ball's had older brothers and structure. People can say what they want about LaVar Ball, but he grew up in structure. He grew up around the game, loving the game, playing it with his brothers. And even though he may love, you know, passing and scoring more than defense, he shows a love for the game that was questioned in pre-draft interviews with Anthony Edwards. But Anthony Edwards is certainly going to get opportunity in Minnesota. I just worry about his inner circle, if he can stay focused. It's a cold weather state, cold weather city. He's going to be far away from the city of Atlanta. It may not be all, you know, hunky-dory. And it wasn't all hunky-dory in Georgia, too. So I just want to see what that materializes as. And then with Wiseman, I think he has upside. I think with the additions, I think they're going to have to try to put more onto Kelly Oubre, Wiggins, you know, Draymond being back. They have some good players on the bench, so I don't think they'll thrust too much on Wiseman. But Obi Toppin is certainly exciting as well. So I think that if I'm going to put my money on one of those people in the top four, I'm personally going to put my money on LaMelo Ball because more so they're going to follow storylines, maybe more so than, you know, play at times. But I'm going to go on LaMelo Ball, then Anthony Edwards, then Obi Toppin, and then Wiseman. No, actually, I'll go Killian Hayes, then Wiseman, just because there's a lot going on in Golden State as far as other people who have to touch the ball.
Absolutely. Killian Hayes has a good route to some touches and some offensive production. So the Pistons, you know, lost a lot. Derrick Rose, the aging point guard there. So Killian Hayes being involved in the offense is definitely something. Their main pieces that they brought in the free agency being Jeremy Grant and the Plumlee brother, not exactly offensive juggernauts. And then it's also couple of good tutors for Killian Hayes to maybe learn some scoring moves and different learning curves from. So yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So he's going to have an opportunity with him getting the ball in his hand. So we'll move on to Most Improved Player of the Year Award, which right now the highest odds out of anybody on the Hawks is Cam Reddish at 33-1. Followed by, and it's all the Magic City trio guys on this list for the most improved player. Like I said, Cam Reddish at 33-1 odds, DeAndre Hunter at 50-1 odds, and Kevin Huerter at 50-1 odds. If you're going to put money on any of these three, who are you putting your money on? Personally, I'm going to say Hunter. I'm going to put my money on Hunter from what I've seen in the preseason, but certainly you can't go wrong with Reddish as well. I think that it's a two-horse race out of the Magic City trio for most improved player if you're going to bet on a Hawks player.
Yeah, just to name a few of the guys that are around DeAndre Hunter that do a lot less on the defensive end, you know, for this 50-1 value here. So you've got Jackson Hayes at 50-1. Great, great player, great motor, mostly offensive rebounds and hustle play and defensive numbers. Juan Hernan Gomez up in Minnesota. Aaron Holiday, kind of buried in Indiana with all those other pieces that they have there. Daniel House, who is just in and out of Houston's pecking order throughout the season, year in, year out. Josh Jackson, Derek Jones Jr. There's a couple of guys in the 50-1 odds range that, you know, I'm a little more inclined to go towards other than DeAndre Hunter. But since we're talking specifically about the Hawks players and what they have as far as value in these spots, so I love DeAndre Hunter in this spot because he does have some of that defensive gusto. He plays hard. We saw him do it at Virginia. He single-handedly won multiple games for them with his defense alone. You know, you got some really great guys here in the 50-1 area. DiVincenzo is 50-1. Markelle Fultz is 50-1. We just talked about Jeremy Grant. He's 50-1 going from Denver to Detroit. And then we get into, you know, the 40-1. You know, there's a couple 40-1 players. Christian Wood is 40-1. He's sticking out to me, 40-1. Cam Reddish up the list a little bit more. To me, he's the better talent and the better prospect that you guys drafted. But as far as the overall more rounded player, I just like what Hunter is compared to Cam Reddish at 33-1. I think there's significantly more value in taking a sprinkle on DeAndre Hunter at 50-1 than there is at taking the more chalkish value at Cam Reddish of 33-1. But as far as actually who I think wins this award and where a lot of value is for me, I believe right here in the top three, we're seeing DeAndre Ayton at 14-1. I like that. I do like that. Jamal Murray has a chance to really, really just do some crazy stuff. But when has he ever taken the chance with his opportunity and ran with it? Jaren Jackson Jr., he tops this list. Injuries. I mean, the guy that's filling in for him, Brandon Clark, is just 8 or 9 spots down this list at 33-1. So there's no value in Jaren Jackson Jr. or Jamal Murray for me in the top three. Tyler Hero, I don't think he really improves on last season. I think he stays about the same. Kobe White, sophomore year, point guard on ball duties for a Chicago team without Boylan. I think there could be potentially some value there, but just not as much as DeAndre Ayton at 14-1. And then where I think the most astonishing value in this is going to be OG Anunoby, and who I think actually wins this award. He is going to be thrust into so much more work and more workload and expectation this year with Serge Ibaka gone. Mm-hmm. And I think his game is going to flourish into more of an overall well-rounded player. We've seen him just captivate and play really, really well in the past. And I think this is the year where he really just has a launch platform. He's a lot of guys in the industry, the fantasy industry, as, you know, a really, really good sleeper this year, someone that's a riser and someone you should try to get some really good value on. So to answer your question about the Hawks in this one specifically, that DeAndre Hunter 50-1 sprinkle looks really nice to me. I really like the OG Anunoby 33-1 to go ahead and just win the award as a long, or, you know, more of a long shot. And then I really, really like DeAndre Ayton at the top as the best option for the top three at 14-1. So those are the angles that I kind of took at it. Christian Ouellette 40-1, I'm kind of looking at just because that guy's a freak.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and to talk about the Rockets game real quick last night, shout out to Broderick Thomas, Truman State graduate. He got signed as an undrafted rookie this year, and he had 6 points last night, including a slam. That is a Bulldog alum. We are out here thriving in all assets of life. So shout out Broderick. Continue to do your thing in H-Town. So we'll move on from Most Improved Player of the Year to Sixth Man of the Year, the highest odds, Danilo Gallinari, who I've spoken about on this program, who I think has a really good shot at being Sixth Man of the Year. His odds are 24-1. What do you think about those odds for Gallinari?
24-1, that puts him at the 8th best odds. I really like that. I think there's really immense value in that. For the fact being, you know, I already talked about Tyler Hero and what I think he's going to do. Tyler Hero, you know, and then with the injuries that Miami could have with Goran Dragic, maybe Kendrick Nunn, Tyler Hero could serve more as a starter at some point in this season. So I think he should be kind of just taken out of the true sixth man approach. And then, like I said, I think he's just kind of going to stay where he was last year. And this year, I don't think he's going to significantly improve. The kid is great. He's going to be great this year. But it's going to be hard to jump up from your freshman to sophomore year statistical measures with how good he was last year. And then that's the main guy right in front of Gallo.
Yeah.
Gallo is the only guy at the 24-1 that I would even take a shot on. Then there's three guys in front of him, Hero, Dinwiddie, Bertans, all at 18-1. The guy I like best out of the 18-1 grouping is Davis Bertans. Just because I think Washington's going to maybe surprise some people. They got some pieces in. Scott Brooks is in his third year there now. And look for some continuity and some restructured offensive flow to come their way. Bertans is a flamethrower. If he can shoot about 44-45% from three-point line and then increase his overall effectiveness and get some defensive stops and some rebounds, I think he's got a good shot of winning this, especially if Washington goes over their win total and he stays healthy. Of course, we got Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams in the top four for sixth man of the year. Lou Williams, year in, year out, he's pretty much the best sixth man in the whole NBA. Dennis Schroeder, now 45-1 in LA. For me, he's going to be important to that Lakers team, more so in the sense of what he can do on the perimeter defense, especially since they lost Avery Bradley, and that was his role. So Dennis Schroeder, Lou Williams has been there too much for me to win this award again. Dennis Schroeder, he's just kind of going to do his own thing. I had him as a dark horse sixth man last year. I think he finished second in voting. Jordan Clarkson, great, great, great deep value if you get him in the 11th round in fantasy drafts. Yes. I think he has a shot here, especially if Donovan Mitchell has to miss, 10 games, 15 games somewhere. Jordan Clarkson, he's an efficient player. He still scores about 20 a game.
Yeah, he's a bucket.
And he gets buckets, and he hits his percentages. So my three guys right here that I like, and Gallo being the longest shot, offering the most value, I think. I really like Clarkson at plus 950, 95-1. I really like Davis Bertans at 180-1. And then Gallo at 240-1. I think one of those three guys has a really great shot of winning this. And the great shot being pretty equal for all three of these guys because of what they offer and the situations that they're in. I'm curious, do you know if Gallo's won the Sixth Man of the Year award before?
That's a good question.
I will look it up right now.
Yeah, I feel like I know he's been close several times, and I definitely agree that if I'm going to pick three players, they're going to throw Lou Will close up to there, but I think Jordan Clarkson, Bertans, and Gallinari are going to have a really good shot this year. And I think Tyler Herro is probably going to get a little bit more into the starting lineup, as well as I think Schroeder will be infused into the starting lineup a lot of times with the Lakers. Harrell's going to have a good chance to come off the bench, especially when you have Gasol in front of you, and he's not going to be playing. Harrell's probably going to be playing more minutes than Gasol this year, so he may have something to say about it. Really good candidates, and until we see it play out throughout the season, what you don't know is what you don't know at this point, but it'll be really interesting to see these dynamics play out. So if people want to put their money in now, I say it'd be some long shots there, but until you see some, rosters and rotations finalized, see how it plays out. And then maybe January, put some money down after Christmas season, you're recovering financially. So did you see if Gallinari won Sixth Man of the Year before?
He has not.
Okay. And I figured that he was close several times, but I like his chances this year. I like what I've seen from him as a sixth man for the Hawks. And I think he's a really steady hand in that unit. And then once Rondo is there and gets integrated, really, because I know last night was the first time seeing him, but once he gets comfortable, I think the sky's the limit there. We have two more odds to talk about before we let Devin go. Coach of the Year, 12th highest odds, Coach Lloyd Pierce at 20-1. What do you think of those odds? I think it definitely depends on the success of the team. The more successful the team is, the higher the playoff seeding, the better chance that he is to get Coach of the Year for the NBA. But what is your thoughts on Coach Lloyd Pierce?
No, so the Coach of the Year, as far as all the Hawks that we've talked about in these odds so far, I think Lloyd Pierce offers the most value. And here's my thinking. I'm looking at the guys in front of him. We got Stan Van Gundy coming back after not coaching for a couple years, right? Mm-hmm. And then he's in New Orleans. New Orleans, I don't think – I'm saying this early, but I don't think New Orleans makes the playoffs. I don't think he's the right coach for that team.
Careful. I'm a Pelicans fan.
I know you are.
I like that perspective. I'm kind of iffy on them being in the playoffs as well. They're going to have to show me. I got to see Zion healthy. I got to see.
Right. Zion from day one of the season is going to be huge. And then what's it look like after Drew Holiday being traded? And,
Which I think Lonzo, who you're high on, I think he's going to really take a step forward. He's going to have to, because there was a lot of times when Drew had the ball in his hands, Lonzo was kind of like James Harden more so because he didn't have that catch and shoot, comfort with catching and shooting, kind of just standing off to the side. And it's basically 4-on-5 offensively with him having the ball in his hands.
He's much so an off dribble shooter.
Yes.
You know, he's more of like a Klay Thompson. Yeah, he's got that 1-2 move shoot. You know, he's got that quick pull from the hip kind of approach.
Yes.
So another coach that I really like is Monty Williams in Phoenix, or plus 1400, so 140-1. I mean, these coaches, I mean, this coach of the year one is going to be tough. Steve Nash, number one. I'm sorry, but just because you come into a coaching position and you happen to come into Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, I don't think that should put you at the top of the Coach of the Year award. Eric Spoelstra, I think at number two, that's pretty great value there. But I don't think it's going to happen just because, well, they made a run to the finals last year. So what are they going to do in the regular season of this season to really warrant that award being given to them? Brad Stevens is always there. He's one of my favorite coaches. They missed some pieces this year. They lost a couple guys in the offseason. So seeing how – but they didn't lose a lot. They didn't lose enough for him to coach. If Boston gets the number one seed and they win the number one seed by like five games, yeah, he'll probably win Coach of the Year. Frank Vogel in L.A., I mean, come on, you won the national title last year. Rick Carlisle, if the Mavericks lock up a number three seed in the West, I could see Rick Carlisle, and if they win their division, I could see Rick Carlisle maybe getting some love at 140-1. Tyronn Lue, same thing, stumbled into another coaching, you know, job with some future Hall of Famers under his belt, and therefore he's high up on the list. Overall, though, I think we would agree that Tyronn Lue's not a dynamic coach. I mean, I love Ty Lue. Don't get me wrong. I loved him as a player. I thought it was cool to see him win the championship in Cleveland, but I don't think it was solely his doing, you know? Monty Williams, tons of value there for me. Mike Malone, I don't think he's really ever going to win it, you know, just for the simple fact that Denver's going to probably be right there at that 2-3 seed every year. They're just going to do what they're supposed to do. And I want to see the Nuggets in the finals. It's not happened in quite some time, or ever, maybe. I can't remember. So that'd be kind of cool. So, yeah, Lloyd Pierce, tons of value at 200-1. I think that's a great, great sprinkle. If you guys get yourself in position to get, like, the sixth seed and you overstep the expectations of just making the playoffs and y'all get, you know, two spots higher, sixth seed, five seed, it's going to be tough. But if y'all get that sixth seed, I mean, I don't know how you don't put Lloyd Pierce in there for Coach of the Year, you know, taking a team that's as young as they are, going from not making the playoffs last year and having all sorts of injuries to coming in this year, executing, winning games that they should. They got to increase those defensive metrics and rankings. If he can get the team within the top 15, 17 teams as far as defensive numbers to give that perception a boost of why he should get Coach of the Year, and then he also gets his team into the seventh or sixth seed in the East as a playoff team, you gotta give it to Lloyd Pierce, I think. I mean, all these other guys have freaking superstars and they're coming off championship runs or they're projected to win a championship. So it's like, you know, how boring would that be to give Frank Vogel the Coach of the Year award because the Lakers won 70 games in the regular season or whatever?
Yeah.
60 games. I don't think they're going to win 70. Lloyd Pierce is the more exciting, most value piece.
Yeah, definitely the most exciting story. It's all about, you know, storyline and whatnot, and they have the more appealing storyline out of the coaches that are in front of him outside of Monty Williams, who they could have started that storyline with the bubble going undefeated and then getting some pieces, and if they have culminated into a good year this year, now you could get about the six or five seed in the West somehow, some way, it could give them a good shot at winning that Monty Williams. So I'm going to go Monty Williams. Lloyd Pierce has a good shot. I think Steve Nash is just going to be up there, just, you know, product of circumstance more so. Yeah. I mean, so, like, but it's going to be interesting to see this all play out. And then the last award, but certainly not least, is the MVP. 15th highest odds, 50-1, Trae Young. And I think this goes along with the same thing that I said for Lloyd Pierce. It depends on the success of the team. If the team is successful, then, you know, I think it ups Trae Young's odds. If he's playing good, even if he's not scoring 29 like he did last year, if he scores, let's say, 26 a game, he ups his assists to 11, maybe 12, and he gets his percentages up and he's more efficient because of what he has around him. I think he has a really good shot at winning the MVP, especially if they happen to be a 5 or 6 seed somehow, some way in the East. But I think that's the only way that he, you know, beats those odds. Because I know that, you know, the L word, you know, kind of stings here in Atlanta as Luka Doncic is a lot of people's favorites to win it, and rightfully so from what they've seen. And he has a really good opportunity to prove that again this year. But, I mean, then you got Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's won it multiple times. You know, Steph Curry with what he has to carry in Golden State. Is there LeBron James, who I thought should have won it last year, will be there. AD. They got James Harden. We'll see what team he's on as this goes out. So it's going to be a very interesting conversation. What do you think about Trae MVP? I'm sure you're going to agree that it goes down to the success of the team. And then what do you think about the guys at the top?
So MVP is the one year in, year out, where it's you've got four guys that you know for a fact probably are going to win it. And I think Trae Young this year is kind of in the situation of Luka was in last year, where if the Mavericks would have done a little bit better, he would have got a little bit more love on the MVP side of things. And yeah, there was a point in time in the middle of the season where it was like, damn, can Luka really? Because he was at like plus 1600. He's a 160-1 odds at one point in time in the season. And I was so close to putting a sprinkle down. You know, I'm a Mavericks fan, so it was like I had a certain different heartstring attached to it. But what he was doing in the teams that we were beating, you know, and then the injuries happened and la-di-da. So it's like Trae Young's very much so in a similar situation this year. But the guys in front of him, it's just – in the sense of where he is and the number and the value as far as the odds, there is value. But then you look at the guys in front of him, and it's just like
– it's tough.
All right, there goes all the value. Because, I mean, Steph Curry, he's 50-1 as number three. He opened as like fifth or sixth favorite, and he's just kind of gone – skyrocket, which I actually kind of like Steph Curry maybe as like a dart throw. If he comes back and he's Steph Curry, I mean, with the rest and the load management concerns for Giannis, I wouldn't be shocked. And I'm not saying Giannis is my MVP, but I think right now the NBA is kind of selling it as that is who they think it is to start the season because, well, he's the reigning MVP. But, I mean, you have guys like Anthony Davis and LeBron James and James Harden and Kawhi Leonard rounding out the top, you know, 5-6 names. And then you got guys like Kevin Durant at 100-1. You know, you spend what that'd be. You spend $1 and you win $100 on Kevin Durant. I mean, to me, that's a great amount of value right there. Kevin Durant, if he comes back, you know, I want to say yes. Let's go ahead and throw a sprinkle on Trae Young, but there's just so many names in front of them and so many different names that are in seemingly better positions as far as team success goes. So that's what worries me a little bit about the Trae Young side. I'm not saying that there's not value at 50-1, but it's just so hard on this MVP sled. You know, I'm having a tough time right now deciding if Luka or Giannis is going to win the damn thing. So I really couldn't even begin to put much of my investment or my hard-earned cash on a 50-1 sprinkle on this MVP race. 50-1 means a lot of different things based off whatever award you're voting on or you're betting on. So
I agree that, you know, the odds are really stacked against Trae Young, and there's a lot that they're going to have to work through as a team. Less than, you know, I mean, like, you know, Golden State with the injuries, but, you know, Steph Curry's won it before, and he's we know he can light it up. We know he's going to be the man, and he's going to get his shots like Trae Young. But like I said, I think it's a little bit different situation in Golden State. Luka is the same. I mean, they were in the playoffs last year, and now they have an opportunity to, you know, come back and right the ship there. Giannis with, you know, a chip on his shoulder, not making it and, you know, trying to – and signing the Supermax and, you know, trying to prove that, hey, I can win here. So he's going to have some added – motivation there. The King and then AD goes without saying, winning it last year, but not winning the MVP might be another notch on their belt. So I definitely think it's tough. I definitely think that's another war to kind of just see how things play out, because injuries and COVID could play a big factor. So you could put your money on one of these players and then boom, all of a sudden they're out for 12 days and that could be 5-6 games. And that 5-6 game stretch, depending on who they're playing, could be crucial to that narrative of MVP and just winning on their teams in general. So the odds are sometimes in our favor, like in Hunger Games and stuff. So I want to thank you guys for listening to the Odd Games. Dun, 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 dun. And I want to thank Devin again for coming on the show. Devin, you extended the hospitality to me yesterday. I was glad to be on. I'm glad that you came on today. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I think it's going to give a lot of people a different heading and different things to think about when listening to this program. And that's just what you do on a daily basis with your show. So Devin, tell them how they can connect with you, where they can follow you, your show, and they can keep up with you so they can improve their odds of getting some cha-ching and keep this a cha-ching when doing fantasy and putting the money on odds.
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, Brad, of course, I appreciate being on here. Like I told you, on and off air, the Hoopball Hawks podcast is one of my favorite within our family. And I feel weird saying that. You know, I am a father. I got multiple children, and you're not supposed to say which one's your favorite or which one you like better or whatever. But, you know, that's kind of how I feel with the Hoopball podcast. I love them all, but I'm just specifically in tune with the Atlanta Hawks right now because it's a team I've been following for a couple of years in the development. Being a Mavericks fan, we had that connection with the Trae Young, Luka Doncic trade picks. So I like the Hawks team, and so I like your content, and you were next to none as far as Hawks coverage, in my opinion. And, you know, for the listeners, a 5-star review or two is definitely warranted for this product, as well as any other Hoopball affiliation or gang, ties that we have. You've got to get out there. You got to listen to us and go to hoop-ball.com. You'll find my Wager Pass articles on there. Of course, Twitter, the show is at Hoopball Gaming. For me personally, at DALE007. Yeah. And I mean, that's honestly the easiest way to get at me. I'm always on Twitter, as you know. I'm always liking, retweeting, subtweeting, replying. I'm always finding something or some piece of nugget of information on Twitter to help with my handicapping. I'm always open to information. I'm always open to receiving and giving information. So DMs are open, and don't worry about hopping in there. You know, I'm not a big personality, so I love getting the interaction with folks, talking through some lines, answering some questions, because it's all perspective for me. You know, if I have to sit back and figure out how I'm going to answer a question or think of a certain number to help give you the most value in your day and out of your hard-earned pocketbook, then it's going to help me out in my day also. Like I said, Brad, I really appreciate coming on the show. I'm glad to have you on yesterday. I know we're going to do this a couple of times for each show. You know, it's just the beginning. We got some really great stuff, the premium stuff on Hoopball, like you do a great job of promoing, and then the hard work that we both put in. You know, there's a lot that we offer, and we do it because we love this content. And I just really like all the listeners and the interaction and all the people that we've grown with over the last year. It's been really, really awesome.
Yeah. And like they say, it's only just begun. It's only just begun. And I know that real quick before I close the show, win total odds projected for the Hawks. They're projected 8th in the East this year and 36.5 wins. Do you agree or do you not agree with that?
I disagree, because I think they finished 7th and they went 30. What you said, 36.5? I think they went 38 games.
Okay. You heard it there. My prediction was 37. We'll see how it stacks up. And again, if you love what you heard today, give us 5 stars. Like Devin said, give his show 5 stars. Give us both great reviews. Follow us here at Hoopball Hawks on Twitter. That is at Hoopball Hawks. Follow myself, Brad Jarrett 67 on Twitter. That is Brad J-A-R-R-E-T-T 67. And as always, yeah!